Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Elon Musk's vice president to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is euphemism.
Yeah. We did dysphemism.
Yeah.
Which was all about making things sound worse than they really are. Because
right.
Dys is negative. And phemism is about speech in Greek. And
yeah,
you, as in utopia, is
good. There you go. Yeah.
Dystopia, yeah. Utopia. So it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. So this is when you replace a word or phrase with something that sounds better in order to make your point sound more appealing or less awful. Depending on where you're starting from.
Yes, less awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So our first example from Trump is one of his many executive orders that he's signed since going into office. And they're all given titles. They typically don't put, you know, awful thing to do because we hate people.
Or because we inherited something we hate. Yeah.
They give them nice titles.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was called Prioritizing Military Excellence and Readiness.
Right, well, that sounds pretty
good. Which sounds like a lovely thing.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good thing that you should definitely want. And there's a certain amount of this, which is kind of Iron Manning. We talked about Iron Manning a while ago, which is pretending that your stance is something that no one could possibly argue with. Like another one of Trump's executive orders claims to be about protecting women from radical gender ideology and stuff like that, whereas really it's just being anti-trans. And protecting women, who could argue with that? And in the same way, who could argue with prioritizing military excellence and readiness?
Yeah, because why would you wish for not excellence?
You don't want military shitness and laziness.
Unreadiness. That's just, unpreparedness. Yeah, don't want that.
But the thing is, this executive order actually has absolutely nothing to do with military excellence and readiness. It is about getting rid of trans stuff from the military.
Oh, okay.
It led to a newly announced ban on trans service members.
Right.
A re-announced ban, because Trump did it in his first term as well.
Yeah.
Although he did that one by tweet. So this one, the policy of this, executive orders are split up into two sections where the first section is purpose and then the second section is policy. And that's the bit that kind of tells you what they want to do. And the policy section for this one says, it is the policy of the United States government to establish high standards for troop readiness, lethality, cohesion, honesty, humility. That's a weird one. Uniformity and integrity. And this policy is inconsistent with the medical, surgical, and mental health constraints on individuals with gender dysphoria.
Whoa.
This policy is also inconsistent with shifting pronoun usage or use of pronouns that inaccurately reflect an individual's sex.
How? Do they go into... Right, okay, just say that. They just state it. They don't explain why. They just state that.
Yeah, the need to call people by their preferred pronouns makes America less safe.
Less ready and less it degrades the lethality of the armed forces. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just transphobic hatred.
Right.
With a much nicer name.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the other things that Trump has done since taking office is pardon various right-wing extremists. Well, lots of right-wing extremists, some of whom were involved in the insurrection on January 6th, but others who have been involved in attacks on Planned Parenthood and and places like that.
Right.
So this is how he characterized one of those groups.
Most of us would not have believed it possible that a grandmother with a severe medical condition, quite elderly woman, would be put in jail for praying here in America. She was put in jail because she was praying. But we're joined today by a woman who was 75 years old. Paulette Harlow was sentenced to 2 years in prison for peacefully praying outside of a clinic, charged under an obscure law that hadn't been used in years.
Paul is one of many peaceful pro-lifers who Joe Biden has rounded up, sometimes with SWAT teams, and thrown them in jail. Many people are in jail over this. This is just crazy. We're going to get that taken care of immediately, first day. But let's call these brave Americans what they really are. It's persecuted Christians. That's what they are. They're persecuted.
Those were two clips, incidentally, that I added together because he mentioned her a couple of times in different speeches. He called these people peaceful pro-lifers, persecuted Christians, brave Americans who have been targeted.
Peacefully praying.
Yeah, those are euphemisms. Pro-life is a euphemism for forced birth.
Yeah.
It's not pro-life because
they
don't care about life. They don't care about the life of the mother. They don't care about life of the child after it's been born.
Nope.
They want to force the mother to give birth, and that's all.
That's it. They don't. Yeah, they're not pro-life of this. We'll support them as a result of that.
Absolutely
make sure
not.
That the people that are having to bear this child and look after it, that are supported throughout the child's education all the way up to adulthood.
Protect it from, you know, guns and shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they are not, they're not pro-life, but that is a much nicer way of saying pro-forced birth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And calling this woman a peaceful pro-lifer, a brave American and a persecuted Christian is kind of euphemistic and kind of just lying because she was absolutely not sentenced to 2 years in prison for peacefully praying outside a health clinic. What she was sentenced for, and incidentally, she never ended up going to prison because as a 75-year-old with various health conditions, she was given house arrest until they were able to find a facility that was able to give her medical care as well as incarcerate her, which they never did because she was only sentenced in June of 2024.
Right.
And then Trump pardoned her when he got into office. So,
so
she didn't spend any time in prison at all. But the thing that she did was she took part in a forceful blockade of a reproductive health clinic in DC in October 2020, where they shoved their way in, she and nine other people, shoved their way in, chained themselves together, and stopped people from being able to access care, which is not an obscure law that there is against that. It's the FACES Act, which is used all the fucking time. Against exactly this thing. It's the freedom of access to clinic entrances.
Yeah.
So this person, along with her nine co-conspirators, was sentenced. They were sentenced to various amounts of time. But there were people injured in this attack on this clinic. This 75-year-old grandmother purposefully fell on the clinic manager, forcefully shoving him into a waiting room chair. Another co-conspirator shoved a nurse, severely injuring the nurse's ankle. A melee ensued, says the Americans United report on this.
Yeah.
It was a non-peaceful, forceful blockade of care in a place which has a law specifically requiring people not to do exactly that. That law, incidentally, the FACE Act, specifically does allow peaceful praying outside.
Right.
That's a thing you're entirely allowed to do.
The bit that we'll arrest you for is everything else. Well, it's this from the guy that has pardoned all those people that he described as patriots who were peacefully protesting the stealing of the election, you know, by smashing their way into a government building and threatening to hang various people and shitting on the desks.
Absolutely. Peacefully, though.
Yeah. Peacefully. You know, they're keeping within the red velvet ropes.
Yeah.
Of course they were.
Yes. And our final example from Trump comes in his debate with Hillary, where he was asked about the Access Hollywood tape.
You describe kissing women without consent, grabbing their genitals. That is sexual assault. You brag that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk.
No, it wasn't. But that's a nice way to say. That's a less awful
was,
way
actually
to describe what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas Anderson Cooper there describes what he said.
Yeah.
You bragged about sexually assaulting women. That's not euphemism and it's not dysphemism. That's an accurate description.
Yeah.
Whereas locker room talk is a way to dismiss it.
Yeah.
By making it sound not as bad.
But actually, it's such a well-used euphemism that everyone knows exactly what it means. So it doesn't actually take any sting out of it because you know that locker room talk is going to include racism, misogyny, you know, ageism, just anything. Classism.
Yeah. I mean, it's the equivalent of boys will be boys kind of thing, isn't it? You know, it's excusing that as just the way that men are.
Yeah, it's just how they are. Yeah, different times. It was different times. Yeah. And again, there's another one, isn't there? Those things that in the UK, you know, there are no 1970s television personalities left either alive or out of jail. And people just like kind of said, it was different times. Yeah. And you think, so these days when you hear something that was broadcast then, there's a warning that says it reflects the mores of the time.
Uh-huh.
And you're watching it aghast with your chin on the floor, thinking, oh my God, it's a sort of pseudo-euphemistic way of talking about this stuff. You know, it reflects the values of the times. Yes, why are you broadcasting this? This doesn't get you off the hook. You shouldn't be broadcasting it. Something's fair enough.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think things like The Muppets on Disney Plus, for example, many episodes have those kinds of warnings on them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there were sketches about, like, travellers who they called gypsies at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And
I
think it's dangerous to just not show any stuff from the past that doesn't align with how things are now.
Yeah.
Because it has a danger of making people not realise what things were like back then, how much things were accepted by society.
Actually, yes, one of those little caveats is a bit like keeping the statues of slave owners in a museum and putting a plaque to explain who they were and why a statue was erected to them.
I think a lot of people would be fine with that, would be having them in a place where the context is given of who they are and what they did and why those statues have been moved from public places.
Yeah.
That is teaching the history, which is the argument that is made by the people who want to keep the statues there with no context, is that, you know, where you're erasing history. I think there is a danger if you don't allow that kind of caveat and that kind of context to be added to things, then you are pretending that, and also there would be a dearth of any content from prior to like
1971,
and even then, not great.
Even then, because it was learning to. Yes, I mean the whole rise of alternative comedy.
There's aspects of Friends that these days do not hold up under scrutiny.
Yeah,
but I think seeing that as not just of its time, in as much as, we can excuse it then, but as an example of what was acceptable in society at that time, or acceptable to the people with power to talk about it at that time.
Yeah.
Because there were always people who didn't find it acceptable. They just didn't have any voice.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they were dismissed. And that's true of the fact that we had the Black and White Minstrel Show on Saturday night primetime TV in the late 70s, which is fucking insane now.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
When you think about the last 14 years, well, certainly the last 5 years of British politics, most of it is euphemistic phrases to describe how marvellous things will be. Even talking about Brexit, which it was all done with euphemism. We will take back control of our money, our borders, our fishing or whatever, none of which is true. And it all hid below its cheery surface things that you didn't necessarily want to engage with or would have to. But I think at the very heart of the kind of use of euphemism was what came out during the COVID crisis, which ended up being Partygate, which was even the word Partygate is a euphemism for the appalling bloody behaviours. And it began with this in 7th of December 2021. It was ITV News. They released a video of a mock press conference from 22nd of December 2020. That was our first lockdown Christmas, in which former press secretary Allegra Stratton and other Downing Street staff were practicing in the number 10 briefing room. And she took mock questions from colleagues, including this one from Ed Oldfield, who was the Prime Minister's special advisor.
I've just seen reports on Twitter that there was a Downing Street Christmas party on Friday night. Do you recognise those reports?
I went home. hold on.
Would the Prime Minister condone having a Christmas?
What's the answer?
I don't know. I didn't.
Wasn't the party, it was cheese and wine.
Just clear, it's not.
Is cheese and wine all right?
No.
It was a business meeting.
I'm joking.
This is recorded. This fictional party was a business meeting. And it was not socially distanced.
What's astonishing is how unprepared she is to be able to talk about this stuff. She just doesn't know. They're workshopping how to answer this.
This is her preparation that we're seeing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that she didn't have a ready answer for that obvious question.
Yeah. How was this not a party?
Yeah.
Yes. How is it not a party? The thing, the very thing that we are not allowed, we're not allowing anybody to do over Christmas. We have done it. We're about to have done it. I suspect that the fact that he asked that question was that they had done it.
Of course they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why else? If you haven't done it,
why else would you have that question?
Why do you need to ask that question in a mock press conference?
Yeah, or they're preparing to have one.
Otherwise, the answer would be, oh, don't be silly, Ed. We're not going to do that.
We're not going to do that because everybody's socially distanced. We're all going to hope. Of course, that's not going to come up because we're not doing that. So they come up with a euphemism for it was a business meeting.
Yeah.
When we know it was a booze-fueled Christmas bash. As soon as that came to light, she resigned. And in January of 2022, so following that revelation in December, further evidence about a gathering in the garden of number 10 that had taken place in May came to light, and Boris Johnson apologised to the House of Commons.
Number 10 is a big department with the garden as an extension of the office, which has been in constant use because of the role of fresh air in stopping the virus. And when I went into that garden just after six on the 20th of May, 2020, to thank groups of staff before going back into my office 25 minutes later to continue working, I believed implicitly that this was a work event.
It's a work event. If nothing else, the legacy of Boris Johnson is that he's added to the lexicon of euphemisms.
You can call parties.
So it's now a work event. And he was convinced that it was a work event. And later on, he said, nobody told me that it wasn't a work event. And even after that, they said, even if they did tell me, I was sure that the rules were obeyed at all time. And yeah, and for the vacillation and the explanation around this and other gatherings slash work events, which led to the Sue Gray inquiry, he was ultimately censured for misleading Parliament, which is itself a euphemism for lying. Lying in the workplace.
Yeah.
As part of your job, you're not allowed to lie. You're not allowed to stand up and lie to everybody else's face on the public purse.
I mean, yeah, technically, but name a day ever in UK Parliament haven't done that.
Quite, yeah. Well, and what's interesting is that, so that's 12th of January. On the 24th of January, the Scottish National Party's Minister, David Lyndon, points out the disconnect between censuring Boris for that, for the misleading Parliament, rather than his various acts of moral turpitude.
Revelations about Downing Street being turned into a frat house during a deadly pandemic are just the latest in a very long litany of bad decisions from a Prime Minister who Scotland didn't vote for. So I must confess, I find myself somewhat baffled and wondering why being economical with the truth in this chamber is the tipping point for Tory MPs with the Prime Minister. Why didn't the Tory MPs see him for what he really is? when he compared Muslim women wearing the hijab to looking like a letterbox. When talking of the war-torn Libyan city of Sirte, he said that it could be the new Dubai and all they had to do was clear the dead bodies away. When he unlawfully shut down Parliament, misled the Queen and tried to run the country like a tin pot dictator. The fact is, this Prime Minister should resign because he is morally bankrupt and he always has been. I see that the Honourable Gentleman, the Member for Shrewsbury, who's managed to come to the Chamber rather than touting for a second job, wants to intervene. So if he wants to stand up and intervene in his speech, he's very welcome to do so. Otherwise, he's going to chanter from the central position.
Could have ended it after he said economical with the truth. That, in the Houses of Parliament, is the accepted euphemism for lying. So you could say, yeah, he's been economical with the truth. He also uses another euphemism at the end, chuntering from a sedentary position, which is because the rule is in the Houses of Parliament, if you're going to talk, you have to stand up and, you know, everybody else goes quiet and you talk rather than just chuntering away. So obviously it's this guy wanted to intervene and say, you know, how outrageous, blah, 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 blah. And the guy that stood up was the member for Shrewsbury was David Korzynski. So he's saying, oh, I see you're in the chamber rather than touting for a second job, because he was being paid £6,000 a month by a New York City based investment firm. And he had described his association with the firm as a job he would do in his spare time. And also, he'd go on to, fairly soon after this, to share a platform with right-wing populist politicians, including Viktor Orban and the Deputy Prime Minister of Italy, Matteo Salvini, at a conference organised by the Edmund Burke Foundation, which is very coincidentally delicious. Korzynski responded in an article published in The Spectator, stating that his reason for attending the conference was to make the case for nation states against European federalism, which sounds like a euphemism as well. And the pleasing coincidence is that economical with the truth was first used by Edmund Burke in a paper published in 1796 called Letters on a Regicide Peace, which included falsehood and delusion are allowed in no case whatever. But as in the exercise of all the virtues, there is an economy of truth. It is a sort of temperance by which a man speaks truth with measure, that he may speak it the longer. And it entered modern lexicon when Robert Armstrong used the phrase in 1986 spycatcher trial, when Margaret Thatcher's Tory government tried to prevent the publication of a spy's memoirs. And he was asked to define the difference between a misleading impression and a lie. And he replied, as one person said, it is perhaps being economical with the truth. And oddly now, it is the accepted way of saying that someone is lying. If you say they are lying, you get censured and thrown out of the Houses of Parliament for using unparliamentary language.
Yeah, it's an accepted euphemism to get away with calling someone a liar, basically.
Yeah. But in 1906, Churchill came up with a much better one, which is terminological inexactitude, which I absolutely love. So our final example, here is unembarrassed racist and director of the Reform UK Party Limited, Nigel Farage, responding to the riots last summer.
Serious career criminals were released. And this to make way for, yes, rioters, but equally, those who've said unpleasant things on Facebook and elsewhere on social media.
Those that have said unpleasant things on Facebook and elsewhere. Unpleasant things being a euphemism for the likes of urging people to target a hotel housing asylum seekers of refugees, in the case of Jordan Parlow, who was sentenced to 20 months, and calling for hotels housing asylum seekers to be set alight, as posted by Tyler Kay, who was also jailed. And during the sentences of Daniel Kingsley, another judge, Rhys Rowlands, said that Kingsley is a bigot who holds deeply offensive and racist views, and that Kingsley appeared to be unhappy that there hadn't been any significant riots in Wales and he wanted some nearer to home, adding, you only post something on social media if you want it to be seen. They're being arrested for posting things on social media. No, they're being arrested for what they posted on social media. Which is inciting people to violence.
It's an extremely common use of this is people who've committed crimes who you happen to politically agree with.
Yes.
It happens a lot when people get fired for being horrendous bigots. And they say, oh, they got fired just for standing up for free speech or, you know, things like that. And it's actually, there was the teacher who got fired for, well, they said He got fired for refusing to use a student's pronouns, but what he actually got fired was for outing a trans student on national TV.
Yeah.
And we had it with the latest Dinesh D'Souza Police State film that we did as well, people supposedly being jailed for merely attending school meetings.
That's
and
right.
Stuff like
yes,
that,
going to, yes, going to school board meetings. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, yeah.
And all of the stuff you said and did when you were there. Yeah.
Yes, it's a bit like Truss saying, I didn't crash the economy. It was the things that people did after my budget that crashed the economy. Like
continuing to want to eat.
Yeah. just pesky stuff like that. Yeah. Goes to Hollywood there with the not really very euphemistic relax.
It's a little bit euphemistic.
A little bit, yeah.
Not quite enough to get it unbanned from the BBC radio.
No, that's right, no. Because nobody noticed until Mike Reed infamously said, oh, I know what this is about. And they kind of went, don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And until we watched the video and then we went, oh.
Yeah. So, in the fallacy in the wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from The West Wing.
Hey.
This is an episode where they are sending in an extraction team into Ghana to rescue some hostages.
They fly in on two Comanches and a Blackhawk. 20 men forcibly secure the perimeter of the barracks. A snatch force of 6 men penetrate and take the captives.
What about resistance?
Well, they're going to subdue sentries and visible guards. They've got heavy sniper rifles and the CIA wet team.
What's the timetable?
47 minutes to get there from the president's go order. That's radio silence. 2 hours to get it done.
Why a wet team?
Excuse me, sir?
Why the CIA wet team? We're not near water.
No, sir. It's called... They call it a wet team because it's bloody.
Yeah.
So yeah. Rather than calling them the Assassin Squad or something like that, or the heavily armed murder group.
murder group. Or or the Sweeney Todd sons. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, they call them the wet team.
Wet team.
Because they are going to be drenched in blood by the time they finished, which is a bit of a euphemism. Makes them sound not as bad. Which is why the president didn't know until he was informed.
It makes them sound like the wet bandits from Home Alone, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. As a sidebar, when his daughter, who went on to be the handmaid in The Handmaid's Tale, got kidnapped, what was the follow up for that? She just like disappeared. Next season, reappeared. That was it. They just went, oh yeah, we found her.
That was the year that Aaron Sorkin stopped running the show.
Mm.
So he set up the cliffhanger, the end of one season, and then John Wells took over the next season and was like, oh, I don't really know how to finish this storyline.
No, I'll just ignore
that. So they kind of glossed over it a bit. But it did.
Yeah.
There was a resolution to it. They didn't just like, oh, hi, Zoe.
Right.
No, they did.
I thought that was it. No, no. That was the resolution.
It wasn't like she came out of the shower and it had all been a dream.
Yeah,
was,
well, yeah.
There was a resolution to it. It was just not like a major storyline for the, what probably if Sorkin had continued, it would have been a thing.
It would have worked all out.
Several episodes and would have been a story arc.
Yeah. But
they were just like, oh, let's get that one over with so we can get on with some politics.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I don't know how we got there, but anyway,
Our second example comes from Bob's Burgers.
Oh, right, yeah.
And this is an episode where Jean has a girlfriend, but doesn't really like her, but does like the fact that her dad is a kind of composer of jingles.
Right.
So he has a lot of music stuff, and Jean is really into music, so he gets to play, while he's her boyfriend, he gets to play with all of the music equipment.
Right.
And that means he hasn't got around to getting rid of her.
Did you really mean those things that you said?
No! Well, a little bit. I'm sorry.
So you don't like me?
No, but I like things about you, like your dad and his stuff.
Oh, you were using me.
I prefer the term networking.
Jean likes to put a positive spin on the fact that he was only with her so that he could go around her house and play with her dad's music equipment.
Networking! There's a duo, an Australian duo, called their show is called Wankonomics. It's basically kind of LinkedIn euphemistic stuff. So, like, in office euphemistic speech, we've renamed some movies. So When Harry Reached Out to Sally, and Mission Impossible was renamed as Mission Statement. So it's just this entire stuff about all these euphemistic terms interfacing with the comestible industry on a self-motivating, freewheeling basis throughout the city. Basically, they're a delivery person for McDonald's. And all of that stuff is kind of a euphemistic rewriting of all the things you've done in order to... And it's not like nobody can see through that, but you just join in and play the game.
And sometimes when that is done, I mean, there's an argument that politically correct terms are euphemisms, but they're being done because a euphemism is a more pleasant way of saying something. And so if the way that people used to say it was offensive, but you still want to be able to refer to that group of people, but you use a less offensive term to do so, arguably you're using a euphemism, and there's nothing fallacious about that. You're just replacing an unpleasant term with a more pleasant term that is socially acceptable.
Yes, you're disarming the power imbalance.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when one group refers to another group in a derogatory fashion, if you take that the derogation away, then it restores the power balance.
Yeah.
So you can, you can refer to that group of people positively, and it's only the people that, well, it's now woke, isn't it? PC, politically gone mad, is now called woke. The people who say, yes, it's all gone bloody woke, are the people that want to retain the power balance.
They want to use the hurtful terms instead of the more friendly.
They go, what was wrong with that? Well, the fact that you can't see what was wrong with that, just go back to the 70s and watch the television series. Go back to your black and white minstrel show and don't bother us.
So our final example in this section is from Blackadder.
Yeah.
And in this one, which is Blackadder 2, so it's set during the Elizabethan era, and Blackadder is selling his house, and the woman he is showing round asks about the toilet situation.
What about the privies?
Well, what we're talking about in privy terms is the very latest in front wall fresh air orifices combined with a wide capacity gutter installation below.
You mean you crap out of the window?
Yes.
Well, in that case, we'll definitely take it. I can't stand those dirty indoor things.
So he's trying to make an unpleasant sounding thing sound more pleasant.
Sound quite posh. Yeah.
Yes. She's fine either way.
Yeah. Yes, it does make you realise that real estate descriptions are all kind of euphemisms.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, I once was looking in East London, and the area I was looking at was described by real estate agents as East Islington. When actually it was just Hackney.
Yeah.
And East Islington, because of all the cachet of Islington, sounded a lot more pleasant than Hackney.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very common thing in real estate where they describe an area as popular and affordable, meaning cheap and overcrowded.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's all kinds of things like that.
So yeah.
It's a you got to frame it in a more positive way.
Hmm.
So before we move on to fake news this week, it's time to officially open our Oscars pool, because it is now available for you to go and take part in at fallacioustrump.com/Oscars.
Excellent.
Where you can predict who you think will take home all of the prizes. Part of the reason we're doing it is because for our patrons, in the week before the Oscars, we will be releasing an episode where we talk about every single film. Every one of the 50 films that has been nominated for an award in each of the different categories, and what we thought of them, and whether they should win, and what should win, and what didn't even get nominated that should have been nominated, and that kind of thing. And we've been watching all of the films over the last few weeks since the nominations came out that have been nominated for Oscars. So we are starting from an informed perspective, and then we'll be giving our uninformed views on what we reckon about it.
Well, they're informed by our own... our own cognitive biases.
And so we will be taking part in trying to predict what we think will win. And we would like you to join in at fallacioustrump.com/Oscars.
Yeah.
And in a way of encouraging you to do so, and also just an excuse to give some money to charity, for every person that takes part in that, we will be donating $5 to a charity called Elevated Access.
Yep.
They're a reasonably small organisation, although they're growing, but they provide an important service. They started out by providing a service to people who needed reproductive health care, and that has now expanded to a gender-affirming care.
Yep.
And it is an organisation that arranges volunteer pilots who have their own planes to provide free flights around America for people who are in areas where they are not able to access reproductive or gender-affirming care in their area, to fly them to a place where they can get that care. Because in a lot of cases, the travel and time spent doing that and the expense spent doing that is a thing that stops people from being able to do it. And so it restricts the ability to access that care to people who are in a higher income bracket, because they have the ability to take time off work or take several days to travel somewhere, stay somewhere, etc. And it means that poorer people are not able to access that care. And through Elevated Access, those people are given the ability to fly somewhere and be flown back. And that means they can access care they wouldn't otherwise be able to.
Because astonishingly, that, well, on their site, it says most people in the US are within 30 miles of an airstrip. There's at least one small airport with a single runway, and that's all it takes. The aviation community has been volunteering, providing flights for cancer patients, victims of natural disasters, domestic violence survivors. And so they now, unfortunately, they're saying, we've got to do this with the current administration for people who are seeking reproductive help or gender-affirming help. So they're providing that service to do it.
Yeah, in 2022, they did 39 flights. In 2023, they did 584.
Yep.
So they are a growing organisation. They work across the US and they help people who need that kind of help. And at the moment, a lot more people need that kind of help thanks to the kinds of restrictions that Trump is trying to put in. So we thought it was a worthy organisation that we could actually make a bit of a bigger difference, even though it will be a relatively small amount of money, but they're a quite small organisation, and so we can actually have
and it feels like it's kind of real proper direct access.
They are also eligible for a matching donation from my employer, which is great. So that means that when we donate $5, in fact, for every person, there will be $10 going to Elevated Access to help them provide those services to people who desperately need them. So if you want to help do that, by all means, you can donate directly to Elevated Access at elevatedaccess.org. We'll put a link in the show notes. But if you want to do it by joining our Oscars pool, that will also help.
So completely free to join, and we will donate. So if just join up and you get bragging rights for beating us with them. We've not yet won.
Well, I have.
We You've not but, yet. But, you know, won. There are... Okay. Yeah. You see, just when you thought as a collective, no. It's not. I was using a euphemistic "we" there, which is like, in order to encourage people to come. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. So this is what I'm up against, listeners. This is what we need to battle Jim against, because he, yeah, you see, he does all the thinking and all the talking, and then he just goes with what everybody else is going to vote for, rather than the things. Yeah, I made the mistake of protest. Mild wines are protest votes. Yeah. But yeah, so join in. You can go head-to-head with us and quiz yourselves on who ought to win, who will win, and see if you can outsmart Jim. I got a feeling I beat you last year.
Last year we were equal, but we were, both beaten by a listener.
There you go. Yeah. So it could happen again.
Absolutely.
No, I'm going to try and win this time. Right, yeah.
So that's fallacioustrump.com/Oscars.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
This is a very nice game. It's a very delicate game. It would be a shame if someone were to pay you a visit and evaluate the game and deem it necessary to take it away from you and show it the sights by the coast, by the cliff edge, if you understand my meaning. Not that I'm threatening anything, of course. No, absolutely not. But it would be a shame if something were to happen to the game.
Yeah, it would be a shame. So this week, I can't remember if it was the last one we did or the previous one, but we had one of Trump's, as the expression goes.
Yes.
In a real quote.
It is made up.
Which he does.
Bloody
he
things,
does love to
yeah.
say it, followed by things that aren't expressions.
Oh, no. Not expressions.
So this is another. We've done this before, but this is another series of those experiences with Trump not knowing what an expression is.
Yeah.
And these are all from before the election. Statement number one, I'd put him in the cabinet, absolutely, but I don't know how he could do that with all the things he's got going. But he can sort of, as the expression goes, consult with the country and give you some very good ideas. Like on AI, nobody knows more about it than Elon. It's a big, you know, big thing. And he said it's very important. I mean, it's very important for the country. If we don't do it, China is going to do it, or somebody else, but most likely China. And China is working right now to develop massive electricity. A flood of electricity. A massive flood of electricity.
As the expression goes, consult with the country. And a flood of massive electricity and a massive flood of electricity. Okay. Uh-huh. All right.
Statement number two. The judge they've got me up against, she's a real piece of work, but I'm not even allowed to talk about it. And believe me, if I was allowed to talk about it, you'd, as the expression goes, you'd hear a lot that you wouldn't even believe. One day I'll tell you. But she gagged me. Can you believe that? Nobody in history has been not allowed to say they're innocent, but I'm not allowed to say it. It's incredible. Meanwhile, the other side, Joe's hired thugs that made up all these lies about me, they get to hold press conferences about it, and the judge doesn't say a thing.
So there he is, not being able to say he's innocent, whilst he's saying he's innocent. Yeah, as the expression goes, you'll hear a lot that you wouldn't even believe. It isn't an expression. He just thinks that everything he thinks, he's basically that moment when your toddler goes through the terrible twos where they realise that actually what they're feeling, not everybody else is feeling. So when they're hungry, not everybody else is hungry. Prior to that, the world revolves around them. And then when you reach two, you realise, oh, actually, the world carries on without me.
Yeah, Trump's never reached
he's
that
never,
point.
He's never got to that point.
Yeah, he's still struggling with object permanence.
Yeah, exactly. Things disappear and he's going, wanders off. Yeah.
So statement number three. If you don't want to have illegal alien criminals crawling through your windows and going through your drawers, as the expression goes, then vote against crooked Joe Biden. Throw him the hell out of office before I even arrive. You got to. Look, if we have this regime, it's like a regime. And believe me, they are bad for democracy. What they're doing with elections, what they're doing in Washington, D.C., with people putting them in jail for years and years and years, and they let Antifa get away with murder, it's just a horrible thing. It's a very bad thing, and it's a very dangerous thing.
Crawling through your windows and going through your drawers, as the expression goes. Nope. I mean, it's quite a good lyric. Okay. Well, they're all completely believable. See, the last one, elections, seems a bit ordinary, which might be, so I'm just parking that for the moment. So the gagged one, that sounds all sort of feasible during that trial. And massive electricity flood, a massive flood of electricity. That sounds like a rule of three building joke type thing written by somebody who knows what he's doing rather than Trump. Well, okay, so I'm going to go for number one as the one you made up.
Okay, so the other two, are you more convinced by?
Number two, I think the judge and the expression goes, you'll hear a lot, they wouldn't even believe, because it's just like a nonsensical, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay.
Yeah. And
number two?
Yeah.
Is fake news.
Oh, nice work. Bloody hell. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's the gag. Believe me, if I was allowed to talk, the suppression code, you'd hear a lot that you wouldn't even believe. Oh, man, that's basically a palindromic sentence, isn't it?
That's one of those ones that it's just kind of stream of consciousness. I just kind of thought, I'll write about the judge, and then just wrote it all in one go.
Oh no! Yeah. I think there's some therapy required now. An intervention is needed if you're able to just do that in one go. Very good.
That's not a real one. But
cool. Oh no! Horrifyingly, that means the other ones are. Oh no!
Which you thought
can't possibly be. It's utterly made up because it's just a joke.
Yeah, that's real.
It's real. Oh, no.
I put him in the cabinet, absolutely. But I don't know how he could do that with all the things he's got going. But he can sort of, as the expression goes, consult with the country and give you some very good ideas. Like on AI, there's nobody knows more about it than Elon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big thing. And he said it's very important. I mean, it's very important for the country. If we don't do it, China's going to do it, or somebody else, but most likely China. And China is working right now to develop massive electricity, a massive flood of electricity.
What's that going to do with it?
I mean, in a way, I'm surprised he didn't say a flood of electricity, as the expression goes. Because famously, electricity and water...
quite well yeah, as he's told us many time, you know, if you've got battery operated boats or even a Tesla that goes into the water,
absolutely, sharks everywhere and immediately,
exactly, electric sharks, and nobody knows more about AI than Elon. They probably do.
So number three is also real.
Oh, my God, yeah.
If you don't want to have illegal alien criminals crawling through your windows and going through your drawers, as the expression goes, then vote against crooked Joe Biden. Throw him the hell out of office. Before I even arrive, you got to. Look, if we have this regime, it's like a regime. And believe me, they are bad for democracy. What they're doing with elections, what they're doing in Washington, D.C., with people putting them in jail for years and years and years, and they let Antifa get away with murder. It's just a horrible thing. It's a very bad thing, and it's a very dangerous thing.
It's just, what on earth is he talking about?
Great question. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bit disappointed that you didn't say a flood of massive electricity as well as a massive flood of electricity.
Yeah, massive electricity. They're
developing massive electricity. Like really big electricity.
Huge electricity.
Huge.
Barely fit down the wires.
Exactly. And the pylons, you think they're big things, those metal pylons to hold the wires up, they're going to be twice that size.
So we do have some social contestants.
Oh, yeah, yep.
On Patreon. We have the Pizza Dude Chronicles on TikTok, who says number three is definitely Jim because, as the expression goes, it just is.
Nice. Very good. Yeah.
Richard Thunder Hopkins on Facebook said, I think Jim made up number one. I've heard ramblings along the lines of number two, and number three just seems to have some Trump about it. Can I choose number one, please, Jim? Thanks.
Yeah. Got suckered in.
On Discord,
Rondo,
who said, you've properly used a metaphor at the end of number one there, Jim. Dead giveaway. I'm not sure it's a proper metaphor, a massive flood of electricity. Renee Z says, I think number one is fake news. No particular reason other than I have some broccoli steaming on the stove and I don't want to overcook it.
Because, you've got to look out for the massive flood of electricity.
Yeah. Steve Pickle says, I'm also going with number one. The others feel pretty familiar.
All right.
Andrew says, I'm guessing number one since I think I've heard both of the others. So number one, very popular.
Ooh, and, how about that?
And in a, I think, unprecedented attempt to mess with this game,
right,
Richard Thunder Hopkins, who already
gave
an answer on Facebook, gives a different answer on Discord in an attempt to double his chances.
Yeah.
He says, I think Jim made up number two. I've heard ramblings along the lines of number three, and number one just seems to have some Trump about it.
Can I choose number two,
please, Jim? So
there's going to be a third platform where he's going to do the third version. Yeah,
I think if I had, I posted the Patreon one a bit late. If I think I'd posted that on time, there may have been a third one on Patreon, similarly worded.
Very good.
Maximise his chances of winning.
But, we see you, Richard.
It's not something we can endorse.
As the saying goes. Oh, wow. Well done. Right. Well, I'll expect a visit. I will take the game away and, as the saying goes, show it some nice sights from a very tall building.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now, save 50% on the new Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called Ethnic Cleansing is Not a Logical Fallacy.
I think,
obviously, we all knew it was going to be a terrible shit show.
Yeah.
But I didn't have Trump vowing to take over the Gaza Strip and develop it as real estate on my 2025 bingo card.
No. Well, it's interesting because in my British politics corner, David Linden, the SNP MP, referred to Johnson saying, there's this, where was that, Libya or somewhere, where they, so it could be the new Dubai. All we've got to do is get rid of the dead people, get rid of the bodies, and it's basically the same notion. With a lot of Trump mixed in.
Well, Jared Kushner did call Gaza a valuable waterfront property a couple of years ago, but Trump reckons that the best thing for Gaza, and obviously for him, is that the US takes over, develops it into the Riviera of the Middle East.
Not for the Palestinians.
No. Absolutely not for the Palestinians. No. They can all fuck off.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly where the ethnic cleansing comes in.
Yes.
Yeah. He wants to get rid of the Palestinians.
Yeah.
He doesn't see any issue
with
various other Middle Eastern countries accepting them as refugees. They'll accept them.
Just give them some brand new, nice, shiny, clean land to...
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Everyone in the Middle East famously gets on brilliantly.
Yeah, they'll just go, we'll have them. Yeah, come this way. Yeah, yes,
But not only that, not only does he underestimate the desire of places like Egypt to just take in lots of Palestinians.
Yeah.
Or anyone to have any issue with him deciding to remove this group from this place.
Yeah.
He thinks that the Palestinians should think it's a great thing and not want to go back to Gaza. He said, I don't think people should be going back to Gaza. Like, he's like short term, at least, until it's all developed. And even then, not the Palestinians, ideally. He says, I heard that Gaza has been very unlucky for them. He's really been doing his research.
Yeah.
He said, they live like they're living in hell. Gaza is not a place for people to be living. And the only reason they want to go back, and I believe this strongly, is because they have no alternative.
Apart from the fact that they've lived there for thousands of years and only got displaced by the European forces deciding that that's where Israel should be.
Yes. The fact that it's their home and has been the home of their families for generations doesn't factor in. He believes it very strongly, though. You can do that when you know nothing about a subject.
Yeah.
You can believe whatever the fuck you like very strongly.
Why would you have a belief if it wasn't a strongly held belief? You just go, I kind of casually believe it, you know, but he can't be seen to be ignorant. So he just said, I heard it's hell for them. Yeah, basically because the place has been bombed to shit.
I heard it's been unlucky, he said. Unlucky. I heard it's been unlucky. That's the fucking understatement of the century.
Yeah, well, there you go. There's a euphemism right there.
They haven't had much luck, have they?
Oh, no, it's a poor old Palestinians. You know, you think, we should up the luck a bit and just go in, redevelop the place, and so make it as nice as the Israelis have made Israel. And then we'll take away all of the fact that Israel controls the water, the electricity, the gas supply, access into and out of. Oh, no, they can't go out of Gaza. They can only stay. Israel can go in and out. Israelis can go in and out of Gaza, no problem at all. And the Gazans can't leave. They can barely go from one side to the other. But that's... it's just down to some bad luck on the part of the Gazans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, he says that he was asked in an interview with Fox's Brett Baier if Palestinians would have the right to return.
Mm-hmm.
And he said no, they wouldn't, because they're going to have much better housing. That's not how rights work. That's the reason, theoretically at least, why someone might not want to return.
Yeah.
But it's not why they don't have the right to go back to their homeland.
Yeah.
Because they'll have better housing. So, that's fine. Because he's going to somehow arrange with countries that don't agree with him doing this. Because a significant part of the Middle East is Muslim and Arabs who tend to have some sympathy for the Palestinians in their plight against the Israelis. Yeah.
Their long run of bad luck. Yeah.
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 If anything, it weaponizes parts of the Middle East against Israel again, and against America, and against any kind of intervention, and desperately damages the shaky peace that was part of the Abraham Accords that Jared was involved in brokering with his 80 pages and a map.
Yeah. Yeah. So many pages. Yeah.
It really seemed, given the look on his chief of staff, Susie Wiles' face, when he announced it, when he was doing a press conference with Netanyahu, it really looked like he just came up with it on the spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she was, I mean, shocked isn't the right word. She was like staring daggers into his back.
What the actual fuck?
It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, you mad man-child?
Yeah,
But it's all he knows. He's a real estate guy.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, this place, this is run down. We can probably get it cheap, basically, is what he's thinking.
Yeah, we'll just have to get the tenants out.
We can sell it off, put a casino in.
It'll be fine.
And,
make a lot of money.
Yeah. The fact that there's 2 million Palestinians there that need to be rehomed against their will...
Yes.
...doesn't fucking enter into his calculations.
If only you watched two of the Oscar-nominated films this year, he might have some insight into the ongoing plight of the Palestinians and their... constant upheaval at the hands of their neighbours to disenfranchise them of the lands of their ancestors.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And of course, Republican politicians, because they are spineless weasels, are barely saying anything about it. Like, some of them have said, oh, that's, I think, was it Tom Tillis? One of them said, I think there might be a kink in that slinky or something, which presumably is a southern metaphor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's some sort of
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham said, because Trump said that he wouldn't rule out sending troops to Gaza, US troups,
to secure
the area. Level it so they can put some hotels up.
Yeah.
So Lindsey Graham said, we'll see what our Arab friends say about that. Yeah, I think we will.
Yeah.
I think most South Carolinians would probably not be excited about sending Americans to take over Gaza. I think that might be problematic, but I'll keep an open mind. No, don't fucking keep an open mind. Speak out against it and say, this is the most insane plan I've ever heard.
Heinous.
He ran on not being involved in
any wars.
And he now wants to go violently into the Middle East.
In order to grab, well, he's on a roll with Canada and Greenland, and he's kind of gone, oh, well, yeah, might as well have Gaza. I could solve Gaza. I'll solve, and Ukraine. He's going to have a go at Ukraine as well. I'll just solve the war by just buying the place. Where's the money going to come from?
I mean, I don't think that he suggested buying it.
Right. He's just going to invade it. Oh, right. He's just going to have it.
He wants to take over it and own it. He says, we'll own it and we'll be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons. Level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, he said.
Level the site as a proper real estate.
Therefore, because they'll be doing, they'll be doing the whole, all of the work, essentially. Yeah. That means that they get the rights to it, essentially. Someone will probably plant a flag at some point and that'll be it.
Yeah.
Because empire building is now a thing again.
Yeah, why not? Oh, Jesus Christ. But Netanyahu is over the moon because that means he can...
Oh, he's totally up
from sea to shining sea. He can go, brilliant. If I can get the Americans backing to finish off what I can no longer politically continue to do, that would be great. I can stay in power. I haven't got to kill any more people because that's kind of going out of favour now. I've got to think of something else, otherwise I'll be out of my ear and end up in The Hague. So if a real estate idiot comes along and says, yeah, we'll clear the site, it's going, brilliant, I haven't got to do anything.
I mean, the other thing is the likelihood of increased activity from people like ISIS, who mm-hmm. are already labelling this as an example of how the US is anti-Muslim, because...
Yep.
Yeah. It's a recruiting tool now.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially with it and for Hamas as well.
Yeah.
For within Palestine, saying, you know, join us and fight because otherwise you're not going to have a home.
Yeah.
That's not propaganda now.
Yes. Yes. It's an absolute gift.
The president of the US is saying, we are going to move you out.
Yeah.
And if you want to stay in your homeland.
Yeah.
We need to fight back.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane.
There's something more malevolent about his ignorance this time round. Last time, he just wanted to join in and all the other despots were going, yeah, you can prospect all you like, mate. You're not going to join our chapter.
Yeah.
But this time round, I think it's
a combination of, well, as I said last time, not knowing and not caring. He's ignorant of international law and how the world works.
Yeah.
And he doesn't give a shit.
Mm.
He doesn't give a shit if his plans hurt millions of people or even end up in them dying.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
No. People, you know, the likes of the news agents, so John Sopel and can't remember the other two.
Emily Maitlis.
They are representative of the Western media who say, oh, perhaps he's pushing the boundaries. He's trying the edges of the, you know, a bit like a two-year-old does. He's testing the boundaries. I don't know that he is. He's just doing what he thinks he ought to be able to do because to him it seems like a good idea.
I don't think it's his plan. I think this is Project 2025's plan.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a certain element of pushing the boundaries in order to get away with, to find out what you can get away with and get away with as much as you can with all of the executive orders that are blatantly unconstitutional and illegal.
Yeah.
Is, yes, some of them he won't be able to do. Some of them, the Supreme Court might go, yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
And he's getting no pushback from Republicans who are in the majority. So,
yeah,
I think part of that is he knew that he wouldn't, or the people who are in charge knew that they wouldn't be able to get away with everything that they tried to do. But the more stuff you try, the more you'll get away with it.
Yeah. Well, it's literally, just throw as much shit as you can at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And then
you have a wall covered in shit.
Exactly. And that, which is the Trump administration.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Wow, 2025 felt like a really long year, but thank God it's finally... What? What the fuck do you mean it's only February? Oh, God. Yeah, it's another week with too much news, even for the bit we humorously decided to call things we really don't have time to talk about. Not looking so fucking funny now, is it? Anyway, new Attorney General Pam Bondi was in the job exactly 5 days before doing something that would get a normal AG impeached. She ordered the corruption charges against New York Mayor Eric Adams dismissed on the grounds that they were filed by the Biden administration and that they're preventing him from doing the important work of rounding up illegal immigrants in New York. Importantly, they're to be dismissed without prejudice, so that at any time Adams steps out of line, they can just refile the charges and beat him back into obedience. She hit a brief roadblock in the person of Danielle Sassoon, the acting US attorney for the Southern District of New York. Sassoon refused to carry out the order on the grounds that she not only believed Adams committed the crimes he's charged with, she planned to bring a superseding indictment with more charges. Rather than carry out the order, she resigned and wrote Pam Bondi a scathing letter accusing her of setting up a quid pro quo with Adams. Guys, we found one, a Republican with integrity. In fact, Danielle Sassoon is not only a Republican, she was just appointed by Trump to the role. She's a member of the Federalist Society and she clerked for Antonin Scalia. And she still did the honourable thing.
Wow.
Maybe there is some hope after all. Sassoon's second and third in command also resigned rather than dismiss the charges, one of them writing, "I expect you will eventually find someone who is enough of a fool or enough of a coward to file your motion, but it was never going to be me."
Wow, nice.
And Bondi's acting deputy AG and former Trump criminal lawyer Emil Bove set out to find one of those fools or cowards. He went to the Office of Public Integrity, presumably under the assumption the name was sarcastic. He essentially locked the department in a room for an hour with instructions to decide amongst themselves who would file for the dismissal or all of them would be fired.
Wow.
After four more resignations, Bove finally found his foolish cowards, Edward Sullivan and Antoinette Bacon. It's not quite done yet, as District Court Judge Dale Ho has to sign off on the dismissal. His ability to refuse it outright is limited, but he can, and very much should, order an evidentiary hearing into why the department was seeking to dismiss the charges. Fortunately, Dale is a Biden appointee and a former civil rights lawyer, and I think there are about seven attorneys who suddenly have a lot of time on their hands who might agree to be witnesses at the hearing.
Wow. Sure, if you were to, say, talk to someone signing up to join a political party as a supportive member or to work in a campaign office, it'd be perfectly reasonable to say to that prospective candidate, you see, this role is for this party that has these values and belief systems, and perhaps you'd be more comfortable actually seeking work at the party that's most aligned to your outlook, like, say, the guys at the other end of the political spectrum. Like if you were Kemi Badenoch trying to convince Nigel Farage that he ought not join the Tory party after all, for instance. And then McCarthy came along and Hoover kind of took issue with employees and prospective employees' thought crimes, as he saw them, for being slightly more lefty than they'd have liked when promoting the ideology that wasn't straight down the line free market capitalism. He questioned their loyalty to the country, if you will. And we all know how that turned out. Yeah, that's right. Arthur Miller wrote The Crucible. Well, predictably, Trump's administration seems to be taking that loyalty one step further, as befits a medieval monarchy, and intelligence agencies are asking candidates for top national security positions in the Trump administration to provide straightforward yes or no answers to the questions. Was January the 6th an inside job? And was the 2020 presidential election stolen? Of course, those who didn't give the desired straight yes answers were not selected. Separately, at least two individuals in FBI field offices outside Washington who were being interviewed for senior positions were asked similar questions. The questions included, who were the real patriots on January 6th? Who won the 2020 election? Who is your real boss? This in the already tense atmosphere at the FBI, where interim Justice Department leaders appointed by Trump ordered the FBI to hand over a list of the thousands of personnel across the country who worked on January the 6th cases, forced out senior FBI leaders and transferred several senior Justice Department officials, and fired prosecutors involved in a special counsel investigation of Trump. At the CIA, however, we appear to be fine. As the president's principal intelligence advisor, I will begin with leading by example, checking my own views at the door, and committing to delivering intelligence that is collected, analysed, and reported without bias, prejudice, or political influence. Biased, prejudiced, and political influence, Trump apologist and director of national intelligence nominee Tulsi Gabbard told the Senate Intelligence Committee. I've been watching the second series of Wolf Hall about Thomas Cromwell negotiating the court of unhinged, dangerous, bloated, gouty, orange-haired, scabrous Henry VIII, whose blind loyalty fails to save Cromwell from the executioner's block. Yeah, make America Tudor again.
This week, Trump announced he was nominating Amazon executive David Keeling to head OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Unusually for a Trump appointee, Keeling actually has some experience in the field. Before he worked at Amazon, he was in charge of workplace safety at UPS, during which time they were sanctioned multiple times by OSHA for needlessly exposing their drivers to extreme heat and repeatedly refusing to install air conditioning in their delivery trucks. In 2021, the year he moved to a similar role at Amazon, the company accounted for roughly half of all workplace injuries in US warehouses.
Wow.
Sure, you might think Amazon has more warehouses than anyone else, so that's bound to happen. But the following year, injuries in Amazon warehouses were found to be 70% higher than in similar non-Amazon facilities. So this guy seems like a great choice for the department whose only role is to value employee safety over profits. But I wouldn't worry too much about it, because Republican Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs has already introduced a bill to abolish OSHA and repeal the Occupational Safety and Health Act, which was signed into law in 1970 by that woke lefty Richard Nixon. Multimillionaire Biggs said, "It's time that we fight back against the bloated federal government and eliminate agencies that should never have been established in the first place. I will not let OSHA push Arizona around with their bureaucratic regulations." Since OSHA was put in place, worker deaths in the US are down by 60% and injuries are down by almost 80%. But Biggs doesn't care about that, because valuing human life eats into profits.
Yeah. Yep. The great thing about being new in the job, or in the job again with people that are new in the job, is you get to be all new and vibrant and smash stuff up and be a disruptor and shiz like that. All start-up-y and zucky and musky. Yeah, let's us here in the all-new staff Department of Energy get all energetic and downsizing and efficient and fuck it, yeah, just fire everyone. They've been here for years, what do they know? They're just clogging up desk space, waiting to retire. Can them, can the lot of them. An Energy Department spokesperson disputed the number of personnel affected, telling CNN that it wasn't actually 300 staffers that got fired on Thursday night at the National Nuclear Security Administration. Less than 50 people were dismissed from NNSA, and that the dismissed staffers are held primarily administrative and clerical roles. Yeah, you say that now, because what the DOE seems not to know is that the NNSA looks after the US's nuclear missiles. Some of the fired employees included NSSA staff who are on the ground at facilities where nuclear weapons are built. These staff oversee the contractors who build nuclear weapons and they inspect these weapons. It also included employees at NSSA headquarters who write requirements and guidelines for contractors who build nuclear weapons. A source told CNN they believe these individuals were fired because no one has taken any time to understand what we do and the importance of our work to the nation's national security. Congress is freaking out because it appears the DOE didn't really realize NSSA oversees the nuclear stockpile, one source said. The nuclear deterrent is the backbone of American security and stability, period. For there to be any even small holes poked, even in the maintenance of that deterrent, should be extremely frightening to people. Not as frightening, admittedly, as knowing that Trump holds the codes to the nuclear football, but it's still up there. Needless to say, the agency began rescinding the terminations Friday morning. Dumbasses.
Somehow, all of Trump's batshit cabinet nominees who have reached the voting stage so far have been confirmed. I say somehow, but we all know how. People didn't vote for enough Democrats in high enough numbers, and now the majority in both houses of Congress is made up of spineless yes-men who are afraid if they step out of line, the richest man in the world will fund a primary challenge against them. Sorry, that's very unfair. Spineless yes men and women who are afraid if they step out of line, the richest man in the world will fund a primary challenge against them. Anyway, as of this writing, insane conspiracy theorist Kash Patel has not yet been confirmed as FBI director. But in the meantime, the agency seems to be in good hands, albeit accidentally. Following interviews with Trump's team during the transition period, FBI Special Agent Robert Kassane was told he would be the acting director, with Special Agent Brian Driscoll backing him up as acting deputy director. On Inauguration Day, however, due to Trump's policy of only hiring idiots, his team listed Driscoll as the FBI's acting director on the White House website, and rather than admit they fucked up and correct it, they just decided to let it stand since Cash will be in the job soon enough. But it turns out that Driscoll is one of those guys who's already had enough of Trump shit. So when he was ordered to hand over a list of all the FBI agents who had investigated the January 6th insurrection so they could be purged, he refused, noting that thousands of FBI personnel were involved, including himself. In a message to FBI agents, he wrote, "We're going to follow the law, follow FBI policy, and do what's in the best interest of the workforce and the American people, always." He hasn't been fired yet, but it'll probably only be a week or so till Cash is in the job and all hell breaks loose. Still, I think it's worth celebrating these little moments of resistance wherever they happen.
Yeah, yep. Elon Musk's team at the so-called Department of Government Efficiency launched its website on Wednesday night with a feature allowing users to trace your tax dollars through the bureaucracy. People can navigate through all federal agencies and offices for details about their headcounts, budgets, and average age of employees. The website states in tiny print at the bottom that its database excludes information from US intelligence agencies. But an easy search shows that DOGE's database provides details on the National Reconnaissance Office, the federal agency that designs, builds, and maintains US intelligence satellites. Not only are NRO's budgets and headcounts classified, but the prospect of Musk's tech team meddling in sensitive personal information is setting off alarms for some in the intelligence community. DOGE just posted secret no-fawn info on their website about intelligence community headcount. So currently people are scrambling to check if their info has been accessed, said one Defense Intelligence Agency employee. No-fawn stands for not releasable to foreign nationals, meaning information in this category can't be shared with any foreign governments, international organizations, or foreign nationals without specific authorization. And of course, being tech support, barely stable genius Elon Musk's team will surely know that the internet used to be called the World Wide Web, and unlike the World Series baseball, some of the internet takes place outside US borders. Also, Musk can't claim he wasn't aware that the National Reconnaissance Office is one of the nation's intelligence agencies. His company, SpaceX, has a $1.8 billion contract with NRO to build hundreds of spy satellites. Hours after this story was published on HuffPost, a White House spokesman said DOGE did not share classified information. Any assertion to the contrary is a lie. Yesterday, the accusation was DOGE was not transparent, and today the accusation is DOGE is too transparent. Stop the fear-mongering. DOGE's mission remains to cut waste, fraud, and abuse, and are doing so with the proper security clearances and following the law, even as NRO's classified information was still accessible on DOGE's website. See, that 1984 fiction novel did prove to be useful in honing the old doublespeak.
A lot of people wonder why the Democrats aren't doing more to stop Trump. And there's two main reasons. One is that they don't get warned in advance about the random shit Trump comes up with. So when you hear it on the news and wonder why Democrats aren't rebutting it immediately, it's likely they only just heard about it on the news too. Second, and more importantly, they're not in power. They have no ability to outvote things in the House or the Senate. So all we can expect is people like Hakeem Jeffries, Pete Buttigieg and AOC making their usual excellent points on social media and on occasional TV interviews and somehow not yelling at almost exactly half of the American electorate for being Nazi collaborators. One thing we do have, for now at least, is the courts. So far, the administration's playbook has been to do blatantly illegal and unconstitutional things and then stop doing them when a judge tells them off, while getting ready to ask their pet Supreme Court justices to let them do the illegal things. And lots of cases are being brought against the illegal shit. So for now, there are blocks from federal judges on the birthright citizenship ban, the freeze on federal grants, the dismantling of US aid, and the ban on gender-affirming care for minors, among others. Trump and co. do reserve the right to be whiny babies about following the law, though. Having been ordered to restore references to trans people on some federal websites, they complied, but added a note at the top to say, Any information on this page promoting gender ideology is extremely inaccurate and disconnected from the immutable biological reality that there are two sexes, male and female. The Trump administration rejects gender ideology and condemns the harm it causes to children by promoting their chemical and surgical mutilation and to women by depriving them of their dignity, safety, well-being and opportunities. This page does not reflect biological reality and therefore the administration and this department reject it. Sorry, I should have said whiny, scientifically illiterate babies. Meanwhile, 14 states filed a lawsuit challenging the authority of the clearly unconstitutional Department of Government Efficiency. And we just heard that that lawsuit has been assigned to Judge Tanya Chutkan, hero of the erstwhile January 6th case against Trump, who is already very much out of fucks to give when it comes to holding Trump and his idiot cronies to account.
Ooh, excellent. These moments, yes, little moments of glimmers of hope. Yeah. Okay, you're in the playground at kindergarten. Some kids found a green marble in the corner of the playground like centuries ago, and despite the finders keepers rule, you think you should have it. The kid tells you politely, no, it's mine and I don't want to give it to you. Anyway, you just got here. What gives you the right? I got money. I don't need money. I like the thing. I own the thing. It's mine. It's not yours. Teachers and playground monitors, you know, grown-ups get involved. They confirm the thing's not yours, never has been. You just can't have it. And sending a baby related to you to go and stand by the thing and pretend other people don't like the thing being owned by the other person and that they'd totally be happy if the thing was yours isn't going to work. Eventually, you go to Congress and a creepy suck-up Georgia Republican Representative Buddy Carter says he'll unveil the red, white and blue land Act of 2025 to apparently help you, who he's calling America's negotiator-in-chief, told you, suck up, to acquire the thing that isn't yours. Now, to be clear again, even if all your friends, well, the ones who call themselves your friends because you told them they can have some candy or you promised you won't pull their hair or something, even if all of them agree and write in chalk on the playground floor that we, the people of the United Playground, say you can have the thing and not the other kid, and what's more, you can call it a different colour for real, it still doesn't mean you can have it. Meanwhile, Denmark have launched their plan to buy California, or New Denmark, as the crowdfunding campaign website said the Golden State would be called, and would see its world-famous theme park, Disneyland, rebranded as Hans Christian Andersen Land. The thing is, the Danes know they're being funny. Trump, the weird fucking kid with no friends in the playground, except maybe Boris Johnson, also thinks he should just be given everything just 'cause. Trump thinks saying his equally funny things backed up by GOP idiot suck-ups actually constitutes A, the art of the deal, and B, foreign policy.
One of the executive orders signed by Trump on day one was called Restoring Freedom of Speech and Ending Government Censorship. And the second thing it promised to do was ensure that no federal government officer, employee or agent engages in or facilitates any conduct that would unconstitutionally abridge the free speech of any American citizen. In unrelated news, the Associated Press was barred from attending a press conference in the Oval Office last week as a direct consequence of the news outlet continuing to call the Gulf of Mexico by its real name instead of the one Trump made up. White House Minister of Propaganda, sorry, Press Secretary, Karoline Leavitt, said, "I was very upfront in my briefing on day one that if we feel that there are lies being pushed by outlets in this room, we are going to hold those lies accountable. And it is a fact that the body of water off the coast of Louisiana is called the Gulf of America. And I'm not sure why news outlets don't want to call it that, but that is what it is." Not adding, "We have always been at war with East Asia." Meanwhile, at the Pentagon, there is a new policy to rotate press outlets out of permanent office space in the building to give other press outlets the chance to enjoy the benefits of greater access. Outlets being rotated out this year include The Washington Post, The Hill, CNN, The New York Times, NPR and Politico. But don't worry, I'm sure they'll be replaced with equally respectable organisations. I've got the official list of who will be replacing them right here. Oh, fuck. Yes, it's Newsmax, Breitbart, The New York Post, One American News and The Daily Caller. Weirdly, Fox News got to keep their existing spot. I'm sure the fact that new Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth had a weekend job there didn't factor in at all.
Yeah. In the UK this week, we learned that Chancellor Rachel Reeve spent fewer months at the Bank of England than she said she had on LinkedIn and had changed the entry there to reflect that after a BBC investigation. The BBC's political correspondent, Chris Mason, also spent a lot of time on the news, telling us we should also get excited about the fact that there was no issue at all with her expenses claims when she worked at HBOS, and that she left there on excellent terms, and there was no suggestion of wrongdoing at all, which was frankly difficult to get excited about, given the relative inconsequence of her actions compared with, say, Boris Johnson's £840 of Roll Downing Street wallpaper, or Liz Truss's £22 billion hole blown in the budget, or Boris Johnson lying to the Queen and everyone about Brexit and proroguing and parties and his suitability to run the country. But hey-ho, journalists are nothing if not balanced, except it seems when it came to allowing Tory ministers to get all flustered about a Labour council somewhat insensitive, ageist, sexist messages in a WhatsApp group, which came to light recently too. Whilst not condoning such activity, and Labour's probably right to suspend the perpetrators pending investigation, no Tory conversation about it wanted to point out when the messaging happened. It was, of course, as we suspected, because the messaging was directly contemporary with the Tories' COVID era, let the bodies pile up WhatsApp messaging, which of course only last year Boris had a great deal of trouble remembering why he couldn't access the vast stock of WhatsApp messages, because he'd changed phones or trousers or addresses or worried about how it would tarnish his reputation as a humanitarian or something. I'm not excusing the actions of the Labour members, but in the interest of balance, it would seem to me to be that's the kind of thing journalists ought to be putting into any interviews with delightfully outraged right-wingers.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our newest patrons, Kristin Gulling-Smith, Alistair Blacklaws and Chuck Gray. Our straw man level patrons, Mike Smith, LT, Colin Laiela, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Aussie on Bank, Mark Reiki and Amber R. Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED, we can just call her Amber. And last year at QED, I met the listener who recognised her at QED the year before because we kept using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons, Schmutz, Sharon Robinson, Renee Zed, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron, Kaz Tui. Thank you so much and welcome, and thank you for your continued and new support.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fallacioustrump or in the Discord at fallacioustrump.com/discord, and you can take part in the Oscars pool at fallacioustrump.com/oscars.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right, go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Hello, my name is Jorge Gaviria, and I'm the founder of Macienda. We partner with farmers in Mexico to bring heirloom corn products to every kitchen. With my Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One, I earn unlimited 2% cash back on every purchase. And it has no preset spending limit, which means my purchasing power adapts to my business needs. My Spark card helps me fulfill my mission of bringing masa to the masses. Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.